Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Mike Akins, Norm Fizikas, and Chris Allen. Coming up on DTNS, Meta seems to be growing, and it seems to be because of AI. A way to watermark text from ChatGPT and real-life tractor beams. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, January 27th, 2023 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
Also from Los Angeles, I'm Lamar Wilson.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
But there's so much Los Angeles that Lamar and I are able to comfortably share it.
We do well with it. You stay on your side, I stay on my side.
That's right. We never cross.
You are the majority of the show today. Congrats.
We win. All right. Let's start with the quick hits. Where's that button? There it is.
Google agreed to make changes to its services to come into compliance with EU consumer protection laws. Google Flights and hotels will clearly show when it's displaying services from Google directly and when it's acting as a third-party intermediary, as well as make it clear that Google Hotels does not verify its reviews. The Google Play Store and Google Store will provide upfront information on delivery costs and availability of repair options, as well as provide additional company details in the Play Store, such as business names, addresses, and contact info. Google will also clearly clarify how to browse other countries' versions of the Play Store in the EU, letting them change a country of residence once per year.
Intel reported it earned 10 cents a share on revenue down 32% on the year in Q4. That revenue was $14.04 billion, if you're keeping track. And what's really more important than the numbers themselves is they missed analyst estimates. The analysts say you got to hit these numbers, and if you do, they're great. And if you don't, everybody's mad. This marked the fourth consecutive quarter of declining sales. That's not good. Intel's client computing group, which includes the PC chips, that's kind of what they're famous for, fell 36% on the year to $7.68 billion. Demand fell mostly in consumer and education markets, so that part isn't too surprising. Its data center business saw revenue down 33% to $4.17 billion. That's a little more concerning. And its network and edge segment fell just 1% to $2.06 billion.
Google began rolling out the ability to require a user's fingerprint or a PIN to view incognito tabs in Chrome for Android. Force quitting Chrome will still remove all incognito pages. The feature came to Chrome for iOS in 2021.
Apple analyst Ming-Chi Kuo has sources who say Apple directed most of its engineering resources toward developing three nanometer sized Apple silicon chips for the foreseeable future. The company hopes these will enter mass production by the end of this year. As a result, though, Kuo says, looks like Apple may have stopped developing its own custom Wi-Fi chip. There have been a lot of reports about that. And therefore, will likely continue using Broadcom chips for the iPhone 15. Therefore, Broadcom stock, I think, went up. So, yeah, good news for Broadcom.
Little more Apple news or potential Apple news. The information sources say that Apple plans to let users build their own augmented reality apps for its upcoming headset by using Siri. For example, asking the assistant to help build something based on scanning and importing real-life objects, like a pet. without having to do all the design from scratch or no code. See, I always go to pets, but, you know, it could be a lot of real-world objects. This would be similar to what Meta is already doing. The Quest headsets let users build 3D environments within Horizon Worlds. And even iPhone users already have some of this functionality as part of Apple's other augmented reality and virtual reality efforts.
Now you know why I'll be chasing Sawyer the dog around later with my iPhone to scan him.
Just making an app.
All right, let's talk a little more about Meta. Wall Street Journal reviewed internal documents from Meta and conducted interviews and wrote a big story about the future of Meta that was actually fairly positive. Meta is bouncing back from its bad year. It is dealing with the fact that it's getting less personal data from Apple users and, in fact, using less personal data in general to target its ads thanks to some machine learning. So instead of gathering your data and using that, they're using machine learning to predict, based on what it does know, what kind of ads might be useful for you and productive for the advertiser. In November, VP and de facto head of Facebook, Tom Allison, wrote in a memo to his staff about another piece of AI that's helping. Our internal data indicates that Meta has grown to a meaningful share of short-form video. A lot of that is due to algorithms figuring out what reels to show to users, both on Facebook and on Instagram. In October, execs reported a 20% gain in time spent watching reels. Now, Lamar, I know you make content for TikTok, reels, etc. Are you noticing that?
I do. Yeah, absolutely. It's funny this came up because I'm noticing a larger gain in views. I'm noticing more people are in regular conversation are talking about Instagram Reels. It used to just be, you know, the de facto name TikTok, like Kleenex, right? Yeah. But I'm hearing people say, no, I'm on Instagram Reels. And one creator recently said he finds the content is better. And they may be a part of the algorithm working better on that. So, yeah, I've been uploading more on there. I'm seeing more views, and I'm seeing just hearing more people saying that they love it, you know, in everyday life.
I'm hearing more people talk about shorts, too. I don't know if either one of you have heard that, too.
I have, too. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, not real. Shorts, no. Mm. Reels, yes. In fact, I know content creators who were like, yeah, TikTok, it was fun for a minute, but Instagram is where all the people really are and have been for a while and will probably continue to stay. And I think that's a really interesting thought is, okay, well, TikTok has been on the upswing for the last couple of years. I mean, who can stop TikTok as far as, you know, good content that I may want to see based on the algorithm? But Instagram is kind of where I hang out more often. So there you go.
Yeah, I'll say this too, that Instagram Reels particularly used to be like whatever got hot on TikTok. It was just like a dumping ground.
Would just get cross-posted. Just to see what would happen.
And there's still cross-posts happen. I cross-post, but I'm starting to see some native things that, you know, are happening or occurring on Reels themselves. So they're starting to get their own people, you know, their own creators. I love what you said. I forgot your name.
Rich.
It's either Tom or Sarah.
Rich Trothelino.
That's me. I went completely blank for a second. No, Sarah, hi.
Hi.
No, I love what you said on that point because Instagram, I've always felt, is my home. I can write stories there, and I feel like that's like my video Twitter. And that's like
the audience is already built in.
Audience is already there. You know, and speaking of stories, I need to make more because I noticed the story mentioned that stories creation ran 10% below. And I definitely feel that I've seen more people that I follow are not making as many stories. And I wonder why that is. Are we focusing our time somewhere else? Maybe on Twitter?
Or on Reels.
All the controversy?
Maybe, that too.
Maybe people are seeing that Reels get more views and they're like, well, I guess I'll make a Reel instead of a story.
Well, stories also, and I don't make stories ever, but I occasionally look at my friends' stories, and there is a little bit of anxiety built into that because it's like, well, okay, so this is time sensitive. If I look at it, you know, within the 24-hour period before it goes away, you will know that I did. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm trying to creep on anybody, but there's a little bit more that I feel is asked of the audience member in order to consume stories. If you're looking at Reels or just posts in general, then it's a little bit more like Instagram's email, where you get to it when you get to it, but it's not so much real time.
Oh, I like that. That's a good. Yeah, I like that.
Example. I wonder if there's a generation breakdown here too, where the oldest users are watching Facebook and they're seeing Facebook Reels, and then the millennials and us Gen Xers are using Instagram and we're seeing Reels, and then the younger set are more likely to be looking at TikTok. Because you're right, you mentioned that earlier, Lamar. TikTok's not falling down; it's not declining; it's right. still groaning. I think this is interesting. I also want to circle back to the idea that using machine learning has helped Meta bounce back on the ad targeting, because it's probably going to be better than using the personal data. It's certainly better for us who want to guard our personal data. And I wonder, given their success in using AI type stuff for both Reels and for advertising and for other things, the Wall Street Journal article said Meta's capital expenditures more than doubled, most of it on AI over the past 2 years. Maybe Meta doesn't become a metaverse company. Maybe its future is as a machine learning AI company, where, you know, 10 years from now, we're talking about, oh, Meta. Yeah, they used to be into social networks, but they're an enterprise level AI provider now. That's where they get all their money from. The way we talk about Microsoft getting all its money from Azure now.
That's a really good point. Yeah, if they can figure out news too, and get people on, some of these companies back on board with that, AI is great for
selling their ability to do that to other platforms as well. I think Absolutely. That would be smart. Yeah.
Well, speaking of AI, ChatGPT, you may have heard about it on this show, has caused schools and teachers to, in some cases, ban its use on tests. And people are, in general, worried about it being fooled by generative text. A lot of folks have been touting different ways to detect if text is indeed written by a chatbot or a human. But let's be honest here. As soon as the detection method gets good, the language models will get better, and so on and so on.
So we should all give up. Kidding. But the MIT Technology Review has an article out called "A Watermark for Chatbots Can Expose Tech Written by an AI." Scientists at University of Maryland made a watermarking algorithm and tried including it in a text generated by Meta's open source language model, OPT 6.7b. They said they were able to detect watermark text really well. The paper has yet to be peer reviewed, but the method is an interesting one. And you can play with it. And they'll release the code February 15th. But Tom, let's explain how that works.
Yeah, so language models, a large language model, which is what ChatGPT is using, generate one word at a time. So we like to think they're composing it the way we do, but they don't. They pick a word, and then they look at their internals and say, what do we think the best word to come next would be based on the prompt we've got? You can use that. The watermarking algorithm divides a language model's vocabulary into what it calls red lists and green lists. Each time a model is choosing that next word, the algorithm encourages it to choose one from the green list if it can. Now, it's not always going to choose from the green list, but it will do it often enough that more than half the words will be from the green list, and the text will still read very well. Here's an example of why that can differentiate machine-generated text from human text. Here's the example. After it chooses the word country, let's say the words – we're going to oversimplify here. The words it could choose are pond, pool, swimming hole, and water hole. They would all make sense given the context of whatever prompt it got. And let's say they all have equivalent scores. So it's not like one is much more appropriate. If pond is on the green list, then the way this watermarking algorithm would work, it would choose pond, whereas a human, which tends to write more randomly, might be liable to choose waterhole or swimming hole or pool. If you repeat that process hundreds of thousands of times, depending on the length of the text you're writing, you'll see the machine language thing use green list words so much that it would make it unlikely that a human wrote the thing. Does that make sense?
It makes sense to me. And it's funny because, especially because, we write a lot of things for DTNS 5 days a week, that I am constantly being like, what's a synonym for pond? Let's make it spicier because I'm a human. The algorithm doesn't necessarily think that way. So you may get more, text that you're sort of like, okay, maybe a little repetitive. Maybe it sounds like the algorithm just wants to go a certain way. But that is a really interesting differentiator between humans who are trying to be creative while saying the same thing all the time, because that's what we do, and a machine that doesn't necessarily understand that.
Yeah, you mentioned synonyms. It'll be interesting to see how this works in other languages, right? Mm-hmm. Because our language is quite complex, but so are other languages, and would it be able to catch those variants?
It's a great point, Lamar. English particularly has a lot more alternate words and synonyms than a lot of other languages. So your mileage may vary depending on what language you're doing this in. But I do think it's clever because we can already analyze word choice and figure out if somebody actually wrote something. There was an author who pretended to be dead and then was writing things on Facebook, and they discovered her by
the romance novel
text analysis and going, wait a minute, she always uses this word, and she always, interpolates these two phrases and that sort of thing. So I love this idea, which is to say, let's create a style in which ChatGPT writes or anything like it, that'll be detectable. The amount of work you'd have to do to change it to remove the watermark would mean that you've actually done the work to make it original, right? To edit it to be your own copy. So it would be self-defeating to try to remove the watermark. I guess the biggest hurdle here is you would have to get every usable ChatGPT like tool to add such a watermark to its system. OpenAI says they're working on something like this, but they're very secretive about stuff, so we have no idea what they're doing. And who's to say that some open source thing comes along that decides that, or that makes it so you wouldn't have to have that element because you could compile it yourself.
Yeah, I am all for this, and I know we get a whole discussion about ChatGPT, as you already have, but I just want to ponder where does this go? Because as Sarah mentioned in the beginning, as one detection method gets put out there, somebody else is going to counter it. And do we just say at some point, hey, let's just give up and focus on, okay, students are going to use this, so let's teach students in a different way.
Yeah.
Or let's have expectations in a different way.
I think if you're just trying to catch student cheating, then yes, it's probably beneficial to figure out how to create curriculum that accounts for the fact that they can use these tools and incorporate those tools the way we have with calculators. It's going to be different than calculators, but there's a way to do that. I think there might be some other beneficial aspects of watermarking this way to just be able to tell if something was machine generated or not in a lot of other ways. In fact, if you have ideas about ways that would be beneficial, email them to us, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Also, if you see stories about stuff like this and you want to let us know, in case maybe we'd like to talk about it on the show, we'd love to get your ideas. Submit them and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
A paper published in the journal Optics Express is grabbing some headlines because it describes a laser beam capable of pulling objects, like a tractor beam, for example. You might say, in what way can it do that? Universe Today's Evan Goff, perhaps Evan Goh, reported on the article last week and gave a good breakdown of the finding. Basically, scientists have used optical tweezers, which can move things the size of an atom, very small things around, but haven't been able to move larger things, aka macroscopic things. So, Tom, what did they do exactly?
Yeah, this is not the first tractor beam, like you said, but it's the biggest one we've made. It's still very tiny. You're not going to be pulling the Millennium Falcon in with this one. What they did is a laser can push an object by heating up one side of the object. The difference between the temperature on the two sides of the objects is something called the Knudsen force. I think it's just Knudsen, but it's spelled with a K. In low pressure atmospheres, so you'd have to have it lower than Earth. They had to have a really low pressure gaseous atmosphere to test this. You can do that and it will move an object. The laser will push the object. Think solar sails. In fact, they said they were able to do three times the magnitude of a solar sail. The scientists were using a graphene composite, so this wouldn't necessarily work on just anything. That's one lab limitation. But they could push that with a laser in low pressure and then figured out how to pull it as well. They coated one side with silicon dioxide, which reduced heat conduction, hit that with the laser. That meant the opposite side without the coating was heating faster. That caused gas molecules to be released from the side that was hotter. And so, you know, it's kind of propelled it forward. So they were hitting the laser on one side, but it was heating the other side. And then you were able to pull it with the laser.
See, I hate that this can only be done in lab conditions. I want to start somewhere, huh? I know. It sounds exciting when we hear laser beam. But lab conditions only. And then, you know, like, very specific conditions, but it still sounds cool.
It sounds really cool. And I'm with you, yeah. Lamar. I'm like, okay, lab conditions, but like, how is this going to help my life when we get better at this? How will laser beams control objects that make it easier for me to do my household chores, I guess.
Yeah. We're decades away from that, probably.
Well,
if not hundreds of years from that. But is that the only thing that makes scientific endeavors like that worthwhile?
Of course not. No, I mean, just to do it is like, okay, this is a thing. Let's figure out how, you know, everyday tasks could be eventually tackled by, you know,
well,
this kind
and
of
also,
technology.
Also, it's not, it may not be good for everyday tests, but optical tweezers have allowed science to be able to manipulate atomic scale stuff in a way that they couldn't before, which allows them to do other work, which then ends up making advancements that do lead to iPhones and things that we use every day. So even if the connection isn't direct, this could do a lot of stuff. One of the things they think it would be useful for is space. So the concentration of the atmosphere that they were using to do the lasers in was similar to the concentration on Mars. So immediately everyone said, well, wait a minute. Back in 2011, NASA was investigating the use of possible tractor beams in its Martian rovers to be able to bring in samples in a way that was not capable, you know, with mechanical things that could break down or get grit in them or whatever. Would that be something they could do? Could you use that when you're flying something through a comet tail to be able to grab a little stuff? Would it work on an asteroid? So there's all kinds of things we could learn by using this possibly as well.
Yeah. That's why I get irritated when people say, like, oh, you know, why spend all this money in space? It's not going to do anything. It's like it absolutely can have practical uses down the line. So let's not stop exploring. Let's not stop trying new things, because it can and will have application at some point to benefit us.
And also tractor beam. Like it really works. It really does work, right? That's the coolest part.
Yeah, we need some sharks. Put the lasers. Okay, anyway.
Yeah. Don't give this
sharks
to the sharks.
With freaking tractor beam.
Yeah. That just makes it worse. All right, we got another scientific advancement to talk about as well.
Oh, we really did. So scientists at Sun Yat-sen University, that's in China, and Carnegie Mellon University in the U.S., published a research paper. Well, they wrote a research paper that Matter published, demonstrating how they created a shape-shifting robot that can switch between liquid and metal states to navigate a variety of environments. Now, you might say, this sounds like Terminator 2. We're not totally at that level yet. These robots they're small. They're actually modeled after sea cucumbers in shape, but they can navigate obstacle courses. They can remove or deliver objects to a model of, let's say, the human stomach. Not a real human stomach yet, but a model of one. They can also liquefy to escape a cage before reforming back into their original humanoid shape. I love this. The scientists use the material gallium. Gallium, if you're not familiar, can easily shift between soft and rigid states in ambient temperature. It's a soft metal, meaning that it has a melting point that's really low, 29.76 degrees Celsius. That's about 85.57 degrees Fahrenheit at standard pressure. So that's less than, you know, a healthy human has in its body, so it could melt easily in your hand, for example. The scientists then added magnetic particles to the gallium to create a magnetoactive solid liquid phase transitional machine. If you're like, what does that mean? Essentially, it gives the robots mobility.
I think the best part of these scientists is not only that they were able to do this, but then once they did it, they said, well, one way we should definitely demonstrate this and take video and put it on YouTube, not just in our article, is to create a little Lego looking figurine and have it melt through bars as if it's Terminator.
Getting out of jail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
The robot's like, can't fool me, man. I'm just going to liquefy and I'm going to go where I want.
This is how you do science.
Yeah, they say it's not Terminator, but
no,
we're on the path.
I feel like they're saying, look, we know you're all going to say this is Terminator, so why don't we just go ahead and demonstrate it as if it was Terminator? Let's not pretend that we're not all thinking it. Let's just do it. Yeah, I love that. All right, let's check out the mailbag.
Let's do it. This one comes in from Chris in Nova Scotia. Hello, Chris. Chris says, I just wanted to share my experience with ChatGPT as a high school visual arts teacher. ChatGPT is excellent at generating drawing prompts. After experimenting with it for a few weeks, I figured out how to get it to create prompts that tie directly into the outcomes for my courses. And it even does well as creating prompts for beginner and intermediate and advanced techniques. I'm so impressed that I'll be recommending it to my students as a tool this upcoming semester. And I'm looking at building an entire project around a prompt that it generated. Chris says, I know many teachers are worried about the impact of AI in education. These are also conversations happening at my school. But I hope that my experience can help inspire some out-of-the-box thinking.
Oh, Chris, this is great. And this goes right to what you were talking about earlier, Lamar.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think it's great. Like, you can, instead of making it a bad evil thing, how can we make it a positive thing? It's out there. So how can we use it positively in high school? And I think that's awesome.
I think that's always true of any big new advance. We're still having the debate about screens, right? Oh, are screens good? Are they bad? Not just for kids, but for us and screen time and all of that. But I don't think anyone would argue that a smartphone is entirely evil and we should all just, well, I take that back. Somebody's going to argue this. Not many people.
Many people think that there are good things about it.
The majority of us understand that there are positives here that if we can figure out the negatives are worth pursuing. So I think we're just beginning to deal with ChatGPT. And yes, there are misuses it could be put to, absolutely. And I'm not saying we shouldn't pay attention to those and figure out how to limit those. But there are great examples of why it's not something you should just kill in the basket right now, right? You should look at like, okay, but it can also come up with these great prompts that Chris would never have come up with otherwise. And that's actually making his class better. It's going to make them better artists because they've got more varied prompts. They're going to start thinking about art in a different way. I think we need to pay attention to all of the aspects of it. And this is a great example. So I appreciate Chris sharing it with us.
Indeed. Thanks, Chris. And thanks to everybody who writes in. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com is where to send that email if you say, I have a thought as well. We would like to hear those thoughts. Keep them coming. Also, keep Lamar Wilson coming to the show because it's so much fun when we have you. Let folks know where they can keep up with your latest.
Yeah, so I just I got the MacBook 16-inch M2 this week with that big 96 gigs of RAM. Nice. So I did an unboxing of that. And I did a tour of my desk area. Also got a second Mac studio display monitor. So got a nice two monitor setup. Did a nice tour of that. If you'd like to check that out, it's at youtube.com/Lamar Wilson. It was really fun. It was just really fun to share. Everybody was asking me about every little device that I had on my desk. So that was kind of cool.
Oh, fantastic. Love that.
Mm-hmm.
We also want to extend a special thanks to Tom S. Tom S., you know who you are. But for anybody else who doesn't know, Tom S. is one of our top lifetime supporters for DTNS. And we like to thank some of our lifetime supporters. And today, it's you, Tom S. Yay. Thank you.
You could be a lifetime supporter like Tom S. Just start today. It's not too late. Patreon.com/DTNS. And Sarah, tell them what they'll get.
Well, if you're a patron, you get all sorts of things. But one of the fun things is our extended show called Good Day Internet. Just a reminder, though, you can catch DTNS live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. That's 2100 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We hope you all have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday with David Spark joining us. Talk to you then.
This week's episodes of Daily Tech News Show were created by the following people. Host, producer, and writer Tom Merritt. Host, producer, and writer Sarah Lane. Executive producer and booker Roger Chang. Producer, writer, and host Rich Drafolino. Video producer and Twitch producer Joe Kuntz. Technical producer Anthony Lemos. Spanish language host, writer, and producer Dan Campos. News host, writer, and producer Jen Cutter. Science correspondent Dr. Nikki Ackermans. Social media producer and moderator Zoe Detterding. Our mods, Beatmaster, WS Goddess One, BioCow, Captain Kipper, Steve Gautarama, Paul Reese, Matthew J. Stevens, a.k.a. Gadget Virtuoso, and J.D. Galloway. Mod and video hosting by Dan Christensen. Music and art provided by Martin Bell, Dan Luters, Mustafa A., Acast, and Len Peralta. Acast ad support from Tatiana Matias. Patreon support from Dylan Harari. Contributors for this week's show included Lamar Wilson, Megan Maroney, Scott Johnson, Justin Robert Young, and Chris Christensen. Thanks to all the patrons who make the show possible.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.